All right, hi everybody, and welcome to lecture 49 in this American History program of History at Our House for the elementary class. This is our last lecture of new material before the upcoming test. So if you have begun working on the test preparation exercise, you will notice that there is one or two questions at the end of the test prep that you haven't yet encountered in your notes or in the class, and so that they will be covered today. And in the class notes that will go out after today's class to supplement this lecture. Okay, so this is the last material. And it's an important part of our story because we are about to start into the American Revolution. And what we are going to see is that Americans are going to have a problem that people have had ever since the beginning of history, as far back as that goes, and further back, I am sure, which is the problem of the power of kings and what to do about it. And we are going to see that their answer is going to be revolutionary. Not merely just a rebellion, but a revolution. They are going to transform the way that government works. So this is going to be a huge thing that's going to happen. And in order to understand how and why they did that, we need to have we need to have three main ingredients. Three background stories to help us understand. And what we have so far is just two. What we have so far is just two, and therefore we need to add one more. So what are the two background ingredients that we already have to understanding American freedom? Well, we know that American freedom is a rebirth. We know that American freedom was based on the studies of history by the founding fathers, who looked back to ancient times and saw that people before had dealt with this problem of monarchy and in fact rejected monarchy and created two better kinds of government. Everybody here now should be comfortable with this. These two forms of government in ancient times that were better than monarchy. So, what were they? Abby, I know you know the answer, so I'm going to try to put some other folks on the spot here. Rosetta, go ahead.
Democracy and republic.
Okay, so Athens had a democracy, and if you had to explain very briefly what was the key to the democracy, how would you explain it, Rosetta?
The key to the democracy.
What would you? What's a definition of democracy? Okay, that's all right. It's all right. I'm just checking to see. We have a key word here, and we need to have clarity on what it means. Can anybody help Rosetta? Sigourney, go ahead.
And the majority of people decide on something.
Okay, right. So rather than one person rules, that's monarchy, democracy is the majority rules. And so the basic thing that you see in democracies is voting. People vote to decide what's going to be done, what the laws are going to be. All right, so the majority rules in democracy. Okay, that was one important, better form of government than monarchy. All right, now we have to talk about the other one as well. What was the other one? We have Athenian democracy. And what was the other one? And what would you say is the meaning of that other form? Wyatt, go ahead.
Republic.
Okay, and how would you explain that briefly? What was it about the Roman Republic?
Well, one thing is that there was a lot of voting still, like the democracy, but it was still But it was one person rules and get to say which person you like best and whoever is the best and which person gets voted is going to be the next leader.
I know what you're trying to say, Wyatt, but that's kind of missing the most important thing about the Roman Republic. So, yes, there was some voting. You're right. And in the American Republic, there's some voting too, right? But that's not what makes a republic. So, maybe, Abby, you can give us? Go ahead.
Well, with the republic, you have a foundation of laws called the Constitution that... you can't break those laws.
Okay, thank you, Abby. That's the most important part, that you have a constitution, a set of laws that protect people's rights. Okay, so there we go. We have two important ideas, the Greek idea of democracy and the Roman idea of republic. The Greek idea of the majority rules instead of letting kings be the rulers, and then the Roman idea of having a constitution to protect people's rights. Okay, those are two ingredients of our American story of freedom. The American founding fathers would tell you that there was no way they could create America without the inspiration and the instruction of these ancient governments. They were the most useful knowledge that the founding fathers had. That's exactly what Thomas Jefferson said. He said, history is that knowledge most useful to us. So they looked all the way back there. But in fact, there was another part of history that they looked back to. There was a third ingredient to their understanding of freedom. There was Greece. There was Rome. And there was England. They were Englishmen. Right? Before they were Americans, the founding fathers were Englishmen. They were Englishmen living in America. They were colonists. So now we want to look at this third ingredient of freedom, which is, what did England give us that is... what did England give as a gift to the world, of freedom to the world, along with Greece and Rome? Because that's it. I think there's really, before America, there's only three really important examples. There's Greece and Rome. I would say those are the most important. But then before America, there was another, and it was England. So let's see, what did England contribute to the story? So let's start with what we know about England based on our anchor fact timeline here. We don't have England on here directly, right? But, you can kind of see up here that England was inside of what in ancient times? What's this map of? I should have had a zoomed in version of it, but England, what was it part of, Rosetta?
The Roman Empire.
The Roman Empire, yeah. England was conquered by Rome, okay. But then we know what happened. Rome fell. So what happened to England after Rome fell? Pretty much the same thing that happened to every other European country, which is to say what? What happened to every European tribe that became a country? I'll ask a very specific question, which is, what kind of government did the people of England have? With the ancient example gone, and the tribes of primitive people creating new countries, what kind of government would they have had? What did everybody have everywhere in the world, unless they could think their way out of it? Jeremy?
A king.
A king. Good old monarchy. The characters weren't called Manes and Armour anymore. The first one that's really important was called William the Conqueror, and after that, more and more of them. But England had kings like everybody else. And, well, the more powerful the king, what happened? Just like everywhere else. Jeremy?
lots and lots of taxes.
Yeah, well, that's true. And that's only a part of the king having power, and so he becomes a mean ruler. What do we call that? The kind of ruler that does not even try to take care of the people, who doesn't even pretend like he's really trying to care for everybody. Dana?
Tyrant.
A tyrant, right, exactly. So just like everywhere else, you would have kings, and the more powerful they were, and the less they even cared to take care of the people, the more they were tyrants. And, well, just like everywhere else, the story of England was the same. Mean rulers, rulers that were tyrants, and then the people would rebel, and then they would get a new set of kings, and so on and so forth. Back and forth, same old, same old, same old thing. Okay. Well, so in that regard, at first, England was no different than any other place. It was pretty much the same as everywhere else. But something did start to happen. There started to be a difference in England, which became very important. And that difference goes back to the fact that we know that England and France had a huge argument. And that huge argument, we already know something that happened because of that huge argument. So what did that huge argument lead to between France and England? What was an event that lasted 116 years? Rosetta?
100 years.
The 100 Years' War. Right, all right. So we already know about that. I'm going to take you now to a map here of the situation in France, okay, and having to do with England. The Hundred Years' War, you might remember, I hope, was the end of an argument. The end of an argument involving the kings of England and the kings of France, because the ruler of Normandy, right here in the top, William, had gone across to England and conquered it. And, well, that created a strange situation. The ruler of Normandy was supposed to follow the orders of the king of France, but he didn't want to because he was the king of England. So this was the huge, long, long, many hundreds of years of arguments between the two. And, well, we know that this led to a war and that France and England became worst enemies forever. But now what we're going to look at is how this affected England by itself. What interesting thing happened in England because of this long argument? Well, there was, as part of this argument, there was a king in England named King John. And he was in charge of all of this, pretty much, like others before him. And he got, not the argument that he was having with the king of France turned into a war. And in 1215, as you can see here, in 1214 and 1215, he lost this. See the difference? 1154, the pink part belongs to the King of England. And then look at 1215. This no longer belongs to the King of England. It was taken away from him in a war. And King John decided he wanted to get it back. Well, if you're a king and you want to fight a war, what do you have to do? Can't do it single-handedly, right? How does it work? Walker?
You have to get taxes so you can pay the soldiers and pay for the ammunition and the clothes and everything the soldiers need.
Yeah, right. You gotta pay for an army to fight for you. Right? Or, I mean, you have to do, now, in the Dark Ages, there were rules that said if the king tells you to fight, you have to fight for him. So that was part of what we talked about early in the course called feudalism, where everybody has to do what the king says. And that includes either fighting for him or giving him, and or giving him money. So King John in 1215 wanted his lords and the people of England to give him money and fight for him in France. In France. Now, well, this upset people. They didn't like the way that John was behaving, and they didn't like the fact that, just like a lot of other tyrants before him, he just expected to be able to take the people's lives and send them off to battle and have them die for him, and people take their property and their money and give it to the soldiers and so on. So the lords of England rebelled against him, as people in other countries and in other places and in England beforehand had rebelled against tyrants. Now, that still, we haven't still gotten to a part which is special, right? Kings wanting to control people, ruling people, and being tyrants, that happens everywhere all the time. But, and people rebelling against that, that's also very common. You see that all over the place. What was special was what happened when the lords of England rebelled. In 1215, they rebelled against the king, they captured him in a war, and they made him sign something. This is a cool painting that some of you guys will remember from European history last year. Very interesting painting. So, what we have over here is King John on that side of the table. And on the other side of the table, we have the lords who are glaring at him and who are angry with him. And there's a document here on the table, and John is supposed to sign it. And some of you remember now what this is all about. This document was a charter, but a very special kind of charter. Now, normally when we have a charter, remember that the London Company needed a charter to go to Virginia. So normally, what do we think of when we think of a charter? Why did explorers need charters and colonizers need charters? Normally, what's a charter, Abby? Oh, just a moment. Oh, go ahead.
Something.
Normally, it's the king giving permission, right? Normally, a charter is the king giving permission. But this charter was different. This charter was written by the lords, and it said to the king, you cannot just take our property. You cannot just force us to do whatever you want, whenever you want. You are going to have to, if you want to tax us, if you want to go and fight wars in other countries, you have to call a meeting and you have to explain yourself to us. You have to provide good reasons why we should fight, good reasons why we should give you our money. And so, by forcing the king to sign here, this was a new kind of charter. And this became a very important part of history. The lords forced the king to sign at the bottom and said, I will do this. Now, it wasn't a gift by the king and it wasn't a permission by the king. The king was forced to do it. And so this is a new kind of limit on the power of the king that these lords in 1215 created. And basically it said, the king must follow the law. The king is not above the law. The law, the charter, is what he must do. And everybody, a lot of people here are eager to say what the name of this particular charter was. So I'm going to go ahead and let Sigourney tell us the name of this charter.
The Magna Carta.
The Magna Carta, which is Latin for what? Do you know? Does anybody know? Charter is carta, and magna. Rosetta?
Great.
Great, yes. Like Carolus Magnus. Great. Magnus is great. Okay, so the Magna Carta is the great charter. Throughout history, looking back on this moment, people have realized that this was not just a bargain between lords and a king. It truly was a great charter that involved a great idea. The idea was the king is not above the law. What an interesting and special idea. Because, well, we've seen that you have in ancient Rome, for instance, the idea of a set of laws that nobody is allowed to break. And we have called that a constitution. Well, here in England, and so what the Romans did was they said, no more monarchy. We're going to get rid of that, and we're only going to have a constitution. And so that's a new kind of government. We're going to call that a republic. All right, that's the Roman idea. Now, the English idea that begins with the Magna Carta is this. We are going to keep the king. We're not going to get rid of the king completely. We still believe in having a king, but we've got to control him so that he's not allowed to be a tyrant. So we're going to take this part here, the idea of having a good set of laws that nobody can break, and we're going to take this part here, we're going to combine them. So we're going to have a new kind of government. A constitutional monarchy. A monarchy, which means having a king, but one in which the monarch must follow the laws, the constitution. Neat, huh? A kind of compromise, a kind of seems a little bit like a middle ground. Now, this is a really interesting idea. The problem is this. Do kings like to follow rules? Is that what it is to be a king? It's a kind of easy question, right? Patrick?
Of course not.
Of course not. Kings want to do what they want to do. They're supposed to be the rulers. But a constitution says, actually, there is no ruler. So a constitutional monarchy is actually a really strange arrangement. It's kind of trying to say, we're going to have a ruler, but we're not going to have a ruler. So, which one is it? Is the tricky question. And so, of course, the rulers want to rule, and the people who want their rights protected want their rights protected, and, well, what happens in constitutional monarchy, which is the history of England, is you get a never-ending argument. You get a never-ending argument between the two sides. Because the monarchs don't want to be limited. The people want their rights protected. So, how do you solve this problem? In English history, it's hard to say that it's ever been solved. In English history, what happened right away after the Magna Carta was that the next king, his name was Henry III, of course objected to the Magna Carta, and he said, I don't want this part, I want this part. And so the poor English people had to rebel against him again, the next king. When the right after the one that signed the Magna Carta, the next one, Henry III, he signed the Magna Carta too. And then he broke the rules. And they rebelled and they said, well, okay, we have a problem here. Constitutional monarchy is going to be hard to do. How are we going to make the kings follow the rules? How are we make the kings follow the rules? Well, the leader of the rebellion in 1265, his name was Simon of Montfort. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to type his name on the screen here, because why not? He's such an important character that he deserves to have his name on the screen. So, Simon of Montfort, in 1265, said, well, in order to make this work, we have to have people whose job it is to make sure that the king follows the laws. We're going to have people elected that will go and they will make sure the king follows the laws. That is what came to be known in England as a parliament. A parliament. So, two changes, two very important steps had taken place. I'll put them both on the screen here. One was the Magna Carta of 1215. Okay, and the next was Simon of Montfort's Parliament of 1265. Within 50 years, the English had come up with two very important ideas. Number one, the king is not above the law. Number two, you have to have a way to force him to respect the laws. And so you got to work at it regularly. You need to have a parliament. Okay. Well, this is not a course on English history. If it was, what we would see is a really interesting story. A never-ending argument about the kings and the parliaments. And we would see that sometimes the parliaments were more powerful, sometimes the kings were more powerful. Sometimes the constitutional part would be strong, sometimes the monarchy would be strong. It would go back and forth. And by the time that colonization of America begins, quick timestamp check. When does the colonization of America begin? Quick summon of the anchor facts. Patrick?
Jamestown.
Jamestown, when?
1607.
Jamestown, 1620. Well, 1620 is Plymouth. Okay, Jamestown, 1607, Plymouth, 1620. Okay, so we're getting, by the time that happens, you guys might remember that in order to make a colony, you had to get a charter. What kind of charter was that, though, again? Getting the permission of the king. The kings were powerful again in the story of England. In fact, the kings believed that they did not have to respect everybody else because they were chosen by God. Remember that idea that the Puritans had a lot of trouble with because they wanted the kings to change the laws, change Anglicanism, but the kings refused to do it? What was the name of this idea that said, oh no, we don't have to worry about everybody else's rights. It's the king who has a right. A right to rule given to him by God. What is that called? Abby?
The divine right of kings.
The divine right of kings, right. So by the time colonization begins, this pendulum, kind of, you can think of it like that, the pendulum of the balance between monarchy or republic, monarchy or constitution, monarchy or rights, swinging back and forth and back and forth. In this, that's a delicate balance. At the point where colonization began, monarchy was strongest. And it would go in two directions from there. In England, they would have terrible tyrants, James I and Charles I, and they would rebel against that. There would be a civil war. That is going to be in your notes, because when you go and you look at the story of the Puritans, and you try to remember that story and how there came to be so many Puritans, it was because they were trying to escape the kings. And they then fought a civil war, and for a while they stopped coming, because they had beaten the king. And then the kings come back. So this is the story of England, back and forth, back and forth. But what about America? This is where we get a new beginning. Because the people of England were coming to America, and, well, how easy was it going to be for the king to tell them what to do? They're far away. They're across the Atlantic Ocean. The king is never going to get on a boat and go and force the people to do anything over in America. He wants to stay in his nice, comfy castle. Aha! So the people in America now had a chance to start doing things on their own, and the tradition of English liberty started to grow in America. And in particular, in 1619, the first parliament was created in America. It was called the House of Burgesses, and it was made in Virginia in 1619. So the idea of making your own laws and controlling the government yourself was now alive in America. Patrick, go ahead.
I just want to say, I noticed that if somebody had found America in 1492, then that means it was 227 years after 1265.
Okay, that's an interesting, very precise identification, right? That when Christopher Columbus discovered America in 1492, parliaments in England had been around for over 200 years. But here's the thing. There weren't parliaments in Spain. There weren't parliaments in Portugal. They didn't have the same ideas. So we have to wait for the Englishmen to come to America. We have to wait for Jamestown. We have to wait for now the House of Burgesses before this idea of people making their own laws and controlling the government and stopping the power of the monarchy is alive in America. Well, again, the seesaw action of parliaments versus kings continued. For most of the history of colonization, the people in America were free to do their own thing, free to have their own parliaments. Virginia had its parliament, New York had its parliament, Massachusetts had its parliament. Each colony had its own separate parliament, and the king was far away in England and mostly allowing them to live as they wanted to. But we start to come back to the power of the kings again, because constitutional monarchy is not quite a full answer to this challenge of what to do about monarchy. The right answer to that question is get rid of it. But if you're going to try to use the idea of monarchy and you're going to have this argument, well, it's going to keep on coming back. And by the end of the colonial wars, the argument was back. Back in 1215, it was King John who wanted to dispose of the life and property of Englishmen in order to conquer France. Well, after the colonial wars, it was King George III who wanted to dispose of the life and the property of his American colonists in order to rule the world. Different time, different king, same problem. And when we come back next week, new solution. The American Revolution. All right, folks, there you have it. The tradition of English liberty that is also going to be one of the ingredients of this wonderful chapter of history that we are going to turn to after the test. Okay, everybody, like I said, you have your test preparation sheets, you have the materials, and you will get your class notes to go along with today's lecture, and you'll be able to use that over the next 2 days to complete your answers to the test prep, and on Thursday, we'll be going over your answers. Tomorrow, we'll get back to history through art. Thank you very much. Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye.
Bye.